Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today you've joined us as we unpack a really interesting legal situation, the case of Sherlaw Group versus Carnevale.
Mm-hmm.
This case, decided by Florida's Third District Court of Appeal, it really shines a light on a fundamental balancing act in our legal system. How do we ensure a party can get the information they need in a lawsuit,
right,
while still safeguarding that crucial principle of attorney-client privilege, especially when we're dealing with, you know, the vast amounts of electronic data we all generate?
It's a huge challenge now.
Think about it. If you were facing a legal issue, you'd want access to relevant info, but you'd also expect your communications with your lawyer to stay confidential.
Absolutely.
So this case gives us some key insights into how courts are navigating this tricky area in the digital age and, well, why it matters to anyone trying to understand the legal process.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And for you, as someone likely heading into the legal profession, this case offers a really practical look at the challenges and considerations surrounding electronic discovery. What's fascinating here is how the court grappled with the sheer volume of information. It's not like dusty boxes of paper anymore.
Not at all.
Now, a single search term can potentially unlock thousands, even millions, of digital documents. This case serves as a critical reminder for all of us, you know, in the legal field, that those traditional principles of proportionality and targeted discovery are maybe even more vital now.
To prevent those so-called fishing expeditions, right?
Exactly. To prevent what they often call fishing expeditions.
Okay, so to set the stage for you listening, let's get into what actually kicked off this whole legal back and forth. What's the story behind Sherlaw Group versus Carnevale?
Well, the whole thing began with a legal malpractice lawsuit, the Carnevales, who are actually attorneys themselves. Yeah, they sued their former counsel, the Sherlaw Group. Their main claim was that the Sherlaw Group mishandled their representation in a matter about the potential dissolution of their condo association.
Ah, the developer buyout situation.
Precisely. Where a developer is looking to buy all the units, it can have huge financial and personal implications for the owners, right? And the Carnevales felt their lawyers just didn't protect their interests properly.
So definitely high stakes for the condo owners. Now, how did this initial malpractice claim then lead to this big dispute over electronic discovery? What was the connection there for you?
Well, during the discovery phase of that malpractice suit, the Carnevales uncovered some settlement communications. These involved the Sherlaw Group, the developer wanting the condo units, and another group of unit owners, the Regenia Group.
Okay.
Now, what raised a huge red flag for the Carnevales, and what's really central here, is that the Sherlaw Group hadn't initially disclosed these documents to them in their own discovery production.
Oof. So they found out from someone else.
Exactly. It was actually the developer's legal team who ended up producing them.
Wow. You can see why that would immediately spark suspicion, right? If your former attorneys were in settlement talks related to the very issue you hired them for, and they didn't share that, it does suggest something might be off.
Definitely looks bad.
So what was the Carnevale's next move then? What did they decide to do?
Understandably, they decided to seek a really broad forensic examination of the Sherlaw Group's entire electronic data system. Their thinking, you know, from their side was, okay, if these key settlement docs weren't disclosed, maybe there's other relevant stuff hidden in the firm's files that could prove the malpractice.
Makes sense from their perspective. And the trial court.
And maybe surprisingly, the trial court actually granted this pretty extensive request.
A full forensic examination. Wow, that sounds incredibly intrusive. Potentially giving the other side access to, like, everything? A law firm's internal stuff? Other client data?
It's a huge deal.
So here's where it gets really interesting for all. What were the specific terms of this court-ordered exam that caused such a major legal challenge?
Right, so the trial court okayed a forensic exam based on a list of over 110 search terms proposed by the Carnevales.
Over 110?
Yeah, and this is where the appellate court really took issue. Consider a search term that seems simple, like condo.
With the asterisk wildcard.
Exactly. Now, the Sherlaw Group, as their name kind of implies, specialized in condominium law. So that single term condo could potentially pull up virtually every document, every email, every note the firm ever created related to condo law.
Oh my goodness, that's staggering. You're talking about years, maybe decades of client files?
Potentially thousands upon thousands of documents, yeah. And many would absolutely contain incredibly sensitive, privileged information about completely unrelated clients.
The Sherlaw Group must have seen this as a massive overreach, right? Compromising their duties to other clients.
Absolutely. That was their core argument to the appellate court, that this was a classic fishing expedition, just a broad, unfocused search with no real basis to believe it would find relevant, non-privileged info directly tied to the Carnevale's specific claim.
They were just hoping to find something, anything.
Pretty much. They argued it was just a way for the Carnevales to dig through their firm's records, hoping to maybe unearth something damaging, whether it was actually relevant to the case or not.
Okay, so you've got the trial court saying, go ahead, search broadly, and Sure Law Group saying, whoa, hold on, this is a huge intrusion into our practice and client confidentiality. How did this then get bumped up to a higher court? What was the legal route they took?
So the Sure Law Group went for a somewhat less common legal path. They appealed to the Third District Court of Appeal by seeking a writ of certiorari.
Certiorari.
Now, for you as future legal pros, it's important to get this. Certiorari isn't your everyday appeal. It's an extraordinary remedy. Appellate courts grant it very selectively.
When there's a big problem.
Usually when a lower court has made a significant legal error that could cause irreparable harm, and it can't really be fixed through the normal appeals process way down the line at the end of the case.
Ah, so it's like hitting a legal emergency brake for critical situations only.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it. The Sure Law Group argued that allowing this incredibly broad forensic exam posed a clear and present danger of irreparable harm.
Because once privileged info is out,
you can't get it back. Their reasoning was, once attorney-client privileged information is disclosed, even accidentally during a review, the confidentiality is gone forever. You can't unring that bell. The damage to the attorney-client relationship, and really the system's integrity, is done.
And the appellate court.
They bought it. After considering the arguments, they agreed and granted the writ of certiorari.
Wow. That decision by the appellate court really signals how serious they thought this was, doesn't it? They basically jumped in and said, hang on, the trial court's order might be fundamentally flawed here and could lead to serious, irreversible problems.
Absolutely.
So what were the key legal principles that underpinned their decision? What was their reasoning for you to really grasp?
Well, the central question for the appellate court was whether the trial court had abused its discretion by signing off on such an overwhelmingly broad discovery order. Their analysis really focused on a couple of fundamental legal principles that are super crucial for you to understand. First and foremost was the issue of the overbreadth of the search terms. Like we talked about, a term like condo in the context of a condo law firm is, frankly, absurdly broad.
Right, catches everything.
It would inevitably scoop up a massive volume of information with absolutely no connection to the Carnevale-specific claims, and it would almost certainly include privileged communications with tons of other clients. This goes directly against the principle of proportionality in discovery, which basically says that the scope of discovery has to be reasonable compared to the needs of the case, the burden it imposes, and how important the information actually is.
So the burden and intrusion here just massively outweighed any likely benefit.
Exactly. It's like saying, give me every document you have, hoping something useful might just, you know, turn up without any real basis for thinking it will. It's clearly not a targeted approach at all.
Makes total sense.
Precisely. And this leads right into the second key legal principle, the idea of a fishing expedition.
Ah, there it is again.
Yeah. The appellate court decided the Carnevales hadn't shown a reasonable belief that this huge, sweeping search would actually produce specific, relevant, and non-privileged information directly related to their malpractice claim. Instead, it looked to the court like they were just hoping to sift through the Sure Law Group's electronic files, hoping to find something, anything, they could use.
So discovery isn't meant for blind searching.
Right. The court repeated a well-established legal idea. Discovery is meant to help you gather evidence to support a claim you already have a good faith basis for, not to let you just go on a blind hunt through your opponent's private records.
So the appellate court's message to the Carnevales, and really to all litigants, is clear. You can't just cast this enormous net into the ocean of someone's electronic data and hope you drag something relevant up. You need a more focused, justifiable approach.
Exactly. And it's important for you to appreciate the appellate court wasn't making up some radical new legal theory here.
They were just applying existing rules.
Yes, they were applying well-established legal principles that try to strike that balance between a party's legitimate need for relevant information and the fundamental need to protect privacy, and especially here, the sanctity of attorney-client privilege. This case is a really good example of how those long-standing legal principles are being applied to the challenges we face with modern electronic data.
Okay, so the appellate court steps in, halts this incredibly broad search. What was their specific ruling, and what are the key practical takeaways for you, especially as you move forward in your legal careers?
The appellate court's ruling was pretty direct. They basically canceled the trial court's order that approved the overly broad forensic discovery protocol.
Sent it back down.
Yeah, sent the case back to the trial court with clear instructions. Develop a much more narrowly tailored discovery order. This ruling has several big implications for you. First, it really underscores that appellate courts are willing to use their certiorari power early on if a discovery order poses a big risk of irreversible harm, like breaching attorney-client privilege.
They won't just wait until the end of the trial.
Exactly. They're not going to wait until the end to fix such a fundamental issue.
That's a really important point to remember. It's a crucial check on potentially over-the-top discovery tactics right from the start. What's another key lesson for you from this case?
The second crucial takeaway, and this is huge for you, is the absolute necessity of crafting and proposing narrowly tailored e-discovery protocols, especially if you're thinking about something as intrusive as a forensic exam. If you're the one asking for that kind of discovery, you must be ready to justify your proposed search terms with specificity. You need to show a clear link between those terms and the specific facts of your case and explain why less intrusive methods aren't enough.
So no more condo.
Definitely not. Broad, all-encompassing terms like condo in a case involving a condo law firm are, well, highly likely to get shot down by the courts.
Okay, so instead of just asking for everything vaguely related to a topic, what would have been a more appropriate approach for the Carnevales based on this ruling?
Oh, a much more defensible approach would have been to propose search terms far more specific to the key people and events in their malpractice claim. For instance.
Like names.
Exactly. They could have used the specific names of the attorneys at Sherlaw Group who handled their case, the name of the developer Rugenia Group, or the names of the people involved in those settlement talks. Maybe combine those with specific date ranges relevant to the discussions. The key is precision. Target the information you genuinely need to prove your case without casting such a wide net that you inevitably grab tons of irrelevant and privileged stuff.
That makes perfect sense. It's a lesson in precision and proportionality, not just a digital free-for-all.
Precisely. And there was one other little piece of this case worth a quick mention for you. The appellate court also reversed a fee award, like sanctions, that the trial court had initially slapped on the Carnevales for this discovery dispute.
Why did they reverse that?
The appellate court's reasoning was simply that the Carnevales hadn't been given proper notice or a fair chance to be heard before those sanctions were imposed.
Ah, procedural fairness.
Exactly. It's just an important reminder that procedural fairness is a fundamental principle that applies everywhere in litigation, including discovery fights.
Okay, so to bring it all together for you listening, what are the most critical lessons from Sherlaw Group v. Carnevale that you should really keep in mind as you move forward in your legal studies and careers?
I think the overarching lesson is the absolute paramount importance of proportionality and using a targeted method when it comes to electronic discovery. You just can't ask for the digital equivalent of someone's entire office filing cabinet anymore.
Courts are watching more closely now.
Increasingly vigilant, yes. They're going to scrutinize broad requests, especially when they risk fundamental principles like attorney-client privilege. This case really highlights the dual responsibility. The party seeking discovery needs to be specific and reasoned.
And the responding party needs to object strongly to overbroad demands.
Exactly. And ultimately, it underscores the crucial role of the judge in overseeing discovery to make sure the process is both fair and effective.
That's a really insightful overview. So in our increasingly digital world where just massive quantities of information are created and stored electronically, this case raises a really important question for you to consider as future legal professionals. How can the legal system best adapt its rules and procedures to allow for thorough, effective discovery while at the same time upholding that ethical obligation to safeguard client confidentiality? And what is the appropriate role for judges in navigating this complex and, frankly, constantly evolving landscape?
Critical questions.
It's certainly a vital area for ongoing thought and development in the legal field. Thanks for exploring this important case with us today.
My pleasure.
We'll catch you next time for another deep dive.